Want flexibility? Take yoga. Want flexibility with your health insurance? Check out United Healthcare Insurance Plans. Underwritten by Golden Rule Insurance Company, they offer flexible, budget-friendly medical, dental, and vision coverage that may be right for you. More at uh1.com. A lot can happen in the next 3 years. Like a chatbot may be your new best friend. But what won't change? Needing health insurance. United Healthcare Tri-Term Medical Plans are available for these changing times. Underwritten by Golden Rule Insurance Company, they offer budget-friendly, flexible coverage for people who are in between jobs or missed open enrollment. The plans last nearly 3 years in some states, with access to a nationwide network of doctors and hospitals. So for whatever tomorrow brings, United Healthcare Tri-Term Medical Plans may be for you. Learn more at uh1.com.
Hey, before we get the show started, I wanted to let you know we are giving away a bunch of brand new Black Magic gear.
Yeah, cameras, switchers, DaVinci Resolve licenses, a bunch of awesome stuff. So stay tuned to learn how you can enter to win free gear from Black Magic, and we're going to tell you all about it later on in this episode. Now cue the music.
Hey, welcome to the 180th episode of Just Shoot It, a podcast about filmmaking, screenwriting, and directing. I'm Matt Unlow.
And I'm Warren Kaplan. Today on the podcast, we have Audrey Moore. She's an awesome actress that's been on some of my favorite shows, including Godless, The OA, Better Call Saul. But more interestingly to us, she's also a podcast host.
We love podcasting.
Well, her podcast is like kind of the acting version of our podcast.
Yeah, certainly. It's called Audrey Helps Actors. It's aimed at actors who need help with the business side and the business architecture of being a working actor. She's got a really analytical mind and a really disciplined mindset, and she's trying to help people learn the things that she's already learned and basically systematize being an actor. Because basically, the bottom line is, like, kind of like with a filmmaker, some people get lucky and those are the stories you hear, but for the people who don't just kind of like catch lightning in a bottle, there has to be a plan and a way to actively build your career. And she's so methodical about the way that she approaches acting. It's really fascinating. And so she's a strong advocate for actors. She's really curious and wants to learn more about what we as filmmakers have to help actors. So it's a really insightful, passionate conversation about being an artist and being a professional.
Just like our podcast, she is trying to target that very wide margin of actors between the new struggling actors and the ones that are winning Oscars. There's all the rest of us, and that's kind of how we are. It's like, you know, the people we talk to, they haven't necessarily won an Oscar yet, but they're also not fresh off the car to LA and trying to figure it out. So the other thing that, again, parallels our show is it seems like she feels that a lot of actors are already preloaded with all the art. They've done Shakespeare, they've done Arthur Miller, they've done acting for Cameron, but they haven't spent nearly that same amount of time working on the business side of things.
Yeah.
And that's what she tries to impart to people. And it's not really just for new actors, because as we all know, the business side of things changes like every day. Like, she just had this casting director on, and the casting director is talking about how different things are today than they were even like 2 or 3 years ago. And so it's a great resource for actors and even filmmakers and people that are casting other people to keep up with what is going on with casting and acting and all that stuff today.
Yeah, I find that listening to people who are driven and analytical in slightly different fields is always really inspiring to me. If you're filmmaking adjacent, the parallels are so obvious that if you're paying attention, you're just kind of soaking up all of these great ideas and great parallel techniques, basically, that you can incorporate into your filmmaking career. And so to me, Audrey's show is a really great resource, not just for actors, but also for filmmakers as well, who want to up their game.
So in the interview, we go really deep into how actors think about acting and how they maybe should think about acting. And we also kind of do a deep dive into like the confidence it takes to tell people that you are what you are, whether you are telling people that you're a director, whether you're telling people you're a writer or an actor. There's something about that switch and that dedication and that commitment that leads to confidence that makes people want to work with you.
Yeah, the parallels are so overt and obvious that I think we, all three of us, had a really special, fun conversation digging in on understanding the other side of the camera a little bit better.
This also is the first episode of our actor intensive.
Ooh, I like the intensive. That's great. Yeah, we're doing a mini series, basically. We had such a great time with our development mini series that we thought this is a great way to focus on a different aspect of directing in a more concise way. So we'll have multiple episodes of sort of entrepreneurial actors over the next few weeks to kind of dig in on the craft of acting, because it's not a thing that we really get to talk about too much on the show.
I'm really excited about our lineup. It's all actors that have been in many things that you've definitely heard of or seen, and they all talk about their interaction with our side of the camera, and a lot of them are working on, you know, behind the camera nowadays.
Well, before we hop into our conversation with Audrey, we do have a little bit of housekeeping. Our Patreon hats are back in stock. It continues to grow. If you want to throw a couple bucks our way to help grow the show, help support things, help give us a little bit of latitude to experiment, maybe do some bonus episodes, our live shows, all of the stuff that kind of over the last year or two we've been able to expand and you know, improve the show basically, I think in pretty significant ways, and therefore grow the community of Just Shoot It listeners who can kind of all communicate with one another. Go to patreon.com/justshootitpod. Yeah, or patreon.com. Maybe you'll find another cool show you want to patronize. Yeah,
don't start searching.
Start with ours, but also listen, you know, a buck for us, a buck for somebody else sounds great to me.
Yeah, so the way the hat thing works is if you become a $10 a month patron, you will get a free Just Shoot It hat. And if you want to change your pledge from $10 to $1 the next month, which I've noticed quite a few people have done as soon as they receive their hats. That is totally cool. With us, we are just excited that people are involved in supporting the show.
But you got to send me a selfie.
Oh, with wearing the hat.
I got to see it.
Or
yeah.
The sticker. We've been sending the stickers to people, too. We need more selfies.
Come on, guys. Yeah.
And we pretty much use the money to lose less on our live shows and on the podcast.
Yeah.
And pay our editor, and so
we'll
check
let
it out.
You know when we break even.
Yeah,
maybe in a year or two, we'll see.
Patreon.com/justshootitpod. Thank you.
Before we get into the show, we've got Zach Lipofsky. He's the creator of Shotlister, and he's also a filmmaker. He's here to talk to us a little bit more about the Shotlister app. So, Zach, you are the creator. You're the man behind this incredible app. And you're a filmmaker, so you must have a specific story. You must have a time when you were like, thank God I invented this app. How did it save the day for you?
Well, that's very true. I actually built the app because I made my very first movie, which was actually an MOW for the Sci-Fi Channel called Tasmanian Devils, about giant man-eating Tasmanian devils.
An MOW, for those that don't know, movie of the week.
Starring Winnie Cooper from the Wonder Years, killing Tasmanian devils.
We went to college together.
It's the best Tasmanian Devil movie ever made. But anyway, every day on that shoot, it was just one of those shoots where everything went wrong every day, and which I'm very grateful for, because no shoot has ever been as bad as that. So,
because you invented Shotlister thereafter.
Well, that's very true. I invented it so that I could basically manage all my shots and change the plan, because every day the plan would change. And there was this one day where we were supposed to shoot all the stuff with the helicopter, because they fly into Tasmania on this helicopter, because they're daredevils there to see Tasmanian devils. Get it?
Mm-hmm. Anyway, that's pretty good, man. That's pretty good.
But they, you know, on the helicopter day, the helicopter didn't show up.
Was it going to fly in, or were you?
No, it was going to be on a truck, because it wasn't actually a real helicopter. Like, all the guts were taken out of it, so you could, like, you know, put it on cranes and, like, swing it around and stuff, which was our plan until it didn't show up. So then quickly, you know, the crew's standing around, and I basically moved all the shots around. I was using a prototype of Shotlister at the time that I had built, and rebuilt a whole schedule from scratch on the day. And, you know, we made our day. We went and shot a bunch of inserts that we needed and a bunch of other stuff. And actually, by, like, lunchtime, the helicopter did show up. So then we had to cram.
Oh, were you pulling shots, like, from the next day into today? Can you do that in Shotlister?
Yeah, exactly. If anyone's used, like, Movie Magic scheduling for, like, creating a one-liner, it's very similar, but it's for shots instead of scenes.
Is there a martini emoji on the last shot of the day? That's the question.
It can actually use any emoji in the keyboard, so go to town.
And how was Winnie Cooper? Was she just, like, showing off her math skills the whole time?
Well, she does save the day with her incredible skills. She takes all the parts of their crashed Jeep and builds a flamethrower out of Jeep parts.
Oh, I've done that.
And then uses the flamethrower to, you know, roast Tasmanian devils. And the special effects team actually built the flamethrower out of only Jeep parts.
What? With a real flame?
Well, you know, they hit a propane tank and the gasoline tank, but every part you could see was from the Jeep. So wow. She's pretty badass in it. But check out that movie and check out Shotlister.
Let's say, you know, $14 for an app. That's like, I need to really like an app to invest that much. Like, is there any way I could preview it for free?
Yeah, could you hook us up?
Well, I'll do you even better than a preview. How about I just give you a free copy and give a copy to anyone who's listening?
Wait, what?
That can't be true, right? How could this guy make any money?
Wait, but how are you serious? How would you give a free copy away?
Basically, what we're going to do is anyone who emails justshootitpod@shotlister.com. We're going to give away 50 copies every month. So even if you're listening to this, you know, 30 years from now, email justshootitpod@shotlister.com and we'll give you a free copy as long as we haven't given away 50 that month. But then just email us the next month.
Yeah. 30 years from now, people are going to be like, wait, the biggest podcast of all time has an email address at Shotlister? What do they have to write in the email?
Just let us know what platform you want, either, you know, macOS, iOS, Android, or whatever platform exists 30 years from now. We'll also have that on your holographic display Shotlister. We'll give you a copy of that as well.
Well, awesome. Well, thanks for talking to us, Zach. And if you have tried out Shotlister, send us a picture of yourself using it. Put it on Instagram. Tag us at JustShootItPod. Tag Shotlister at Shotlister and let us know what you think of it. And here is Audrey Moore.
All right. Audrey.
Hi.
How do you pronounce your last name? It's Helps Actors?
Audrey Helps Actors is my last name.
Yeah, you gotcha. Yeah. Cool.
Uh-huh. Oh, I always thought Helps was your middle name.
Yeah, Helps is my middle name. Actors
is that
my,
Swedish?
Right. It is Swedish, yeah.
Yeah.
A Swedish and a German, I think. Helps Actors.
Yeah, yeah. How was your midsummer?
You know, I didn't. What happens in midsummer? Do they all die? Is that what happens?
Yeah.
I survived?
Yeah, yeah.
I survived.
You made it through.
Right?
Boy. You guys don't.
And spoilers.
Spoilers.
Oh, yeah. Oren hasn't seen it.
Out the gate. Come on. You can look at the preview and know that.
Yeah, yeah.
That's what Matt keeps telling me about every movie. He's like, well, you saw the trailer, right? I'm like, right. No, I didn't.
You didn't?
This is not a slight.
You watched trailers all
the day? No, I did. But anyway.
You guys, well, spoiler. That was going to be my
unpaid endorsement.
Yeah, I really loved Midsommar.
Oh, did you like it?
I loved it.
Yeah.
Yeah, I haven't stopped thinking about it.
Did you see it yet, Jesse? So everyone's listeners know, well, I'll be constantly referring to my husband, who's the producer of the podcast that I do, Audrey Helps Actors. But he likes to sit in the corner and not participate. He nods his head.
Yeah. Encouragement, though, right?
Oh, that's totally good. Encouraging. That's good. Yeah.
I was listening to your last episode and I heard you like high five someone. And I was like, is she just like clapping her hand or is there someone with her? Because it was during your intro.
Oh, right. Yeah, that was probably you, right? Yeah, that was him. See, he's nod silently. Yeah, yeah. That's what he does. Okay.
We have a friend who does a podcast called Respect the Process, and he like must have paid like a voiceover actor years ago to like do like the intro.
Yeah.
But he always does bits as though she's in the room.
It's like, Helen, what do you think? Should we mention my new course is coming out? Nah, we don't want to plug my course. Yeah. I've done that too much.
I love
does
that.
Every episode, and it's always charming.
It's really good.
Yeah, yeah. There's a lot of self-awareness.
Her name's Helen.
Yeah, yeah.
What's up, Helen?
My favorite bit is when he'll be like, "Well, Helen, what do you think of that?" And she'll go, "You know, respect the process," or just like a clear like soundbite that doesn't make any sense at all. It's so good.
But he'll also he'll like make changes on his show, and he'll be like, "Oh, Helen is telling me that the intro music is just getting boring, so we're trying something new."
Yeah.
I love this. It's like Mr. What is his name on Tim the Toolman Taylor? He's got the guy that you never see.
Oh,
the neighbor.
Sure.
The neighbor.
Yeah.
Mr. Wilson? Can't be Mr. Sounds, Wilson, isn't it?
Sounds right.
I think it's Wilson. It's not Mr. Wilson.
It
I think
is
it's
Wilson,
just Wilson.
But right? I never made the connection.
Yeah, Mr. Wilson.
That must have been
I'm sure.
intentional.
I know. Yeah. How many things do you watch now that you realize were clearly like, brilliantly intentional, but you were too young to understand the brilliance of it?
Almost none.
Really?
Yeah. Yeah.
You guys don't watch enough cartoons. That's what I have to say.
Or Oren's just very smart.
Yeah, well, he's too smart for it. Yeah, that's
right. I don't get references. So Audrey, so you're an actress.
I am.
Oh, actually, that was my first question.
Okay.
So I heard you on your podcast refer to actresses as actresses.
Yes.
What's your take on it?
I don't think it matters.
Okay. That's what I think, but I feel like a jerk every time I say the word actress. It's just like by instinct I say it, but then people are like, well, you don't say doctress. Say
no.
Doctor.
Yeah, but you could just say actor either way.
Yeah, I feel like I, you know, if I'm just talking to the ladies, I would probably be like, you know, a lot of you actresses out there, instead of being like, a lot of you actors who have vaginas, just know this is something maybe you'll come across, you know?
Yeah, fair enough.
Right?
Fair enough. Yeah.
It's like, you're saying it's a more specific
word? It's, well, I do think that there are obviously certain issues, just like anything, that affect different people in different ways. You know, actors who've been at it for 40 years have certain obstacles that they're getting around that's different than, you know, somebody who's 20, right? And just like that, somebody, I think that actresses have certain things that they maybe are up against in a way that's different than actors, and not in a better or worse way necessarily, just in a way worth addressing sometimes.
Yeah, fair enough.
Okay, cool.
Well, there we go.
Well, done.
Done.
Yeah.
Yeah. And we're wrapped.
Cool. Great work. You know, so we'll do like a little intro, you know, after the episode wraps and all this stuff, just kind of setting things up. But just for our own, because I don't know your origin story, right?
Great.
You're a working actor, right?
Yes. Uh-huh.
And you have a podcast.
I do.
Where you help actors.
That's right.
Give us the genesis of that. Let's kind of start from the beginning a little bit.
Yeah. So I have a podcast wherein I help actors, as Audrey. And it started as a real desire to, A, fill an actor's time, and you both live and love actresses, so you know how that can go. It can be lots of bangs and lots of lulls and busts, and it's important, I find, to have something to do in your lulls of your career that can keep you from becoming a crazy person to your agent. So it was partly born out of that for my own selfish interest. It was also born out of a real feeling like, when it comes to the business side of acting, when it comes to the practical, how do you get seen? How do you build a career that makes money and consistently makes money that, you know, people can then take, right? Nobody's teaching that in any of your university levels, in any of your anything, really.
Sure.
And
there's not even like a Leslie Kahn
there
like business of acting
class. It's starting to happen, where I actually think it's because a lot of people from the podcast are very fervent, as you can imagine, actors. It's a fervent group.
Sure, sure.
And they are all in these acting classes, and they're telling, I think, their teachers how what's so great about it is, you know, it's a podcast that really addresses like some practical tools and knowledge about working in this industry as an actor, because the lot that we're sold, and I know you've talked about this with writing and directing and filmmaking, is you go to these schools and they basically sell you that like you're going to be the next
You're a genius,
lead,
right?
The next legend, right?
Yeah. And that's I haven't figured out that I'm not yet.
Right, and me neither. It's cool.
Yeah, that's why we have podcasts.
Always in the making, legend, always in the making, right? And the people who are teaching you that are teaching you that acting is really like the talent is it, that it's like acting and proficiency as an actor is really what matters. And I could tell through my own personal journey and through the journey of those that I loved that that wasn't the full story. It isn't that it doesn't matter. It absolutely does. But there's a reason why certain people work and work consistently. And if you're an actor who isn't, there's something to be solved there. And simply giving some perspective, some insight, having other guests on, other actors who are working, and providing a little insight of just exactly what you guys are doing for this, of like, what is the practical reality of how I get funding for a film? What's the practical reality of like, what is a one pager? Like, what does that look like? Right. And so for me, it's like, how does a casting director know you? How do they know you over time? How do they, why would they call you in? How do you get an agent? How do you get a better agent? And also like dispelling this real, this myth that really leaves us all really angry, really heartbroken. A lot of shame, a lot of internal shame and frustration, because we're sold that we're magic. And then we do what we know to do, which is to just be the best actors in the room that we know how to be. And then it seems like that's not enough.
I always think of it as like, you're the most magical person in your hometown and everybody knows it.
Yeah.
And then all those magical people are sent to LA.
Yes.
And then you always hear these stories. So my dad lives in Israel, and I've been there many times, and there's all these celebrities there that have, like, they're like the most famous person in Israel,
yeah,
and they come here and they cannot break through.
Or yeah, any other market.
We have those friends. We have friends who are famous in their other countries too. And like, nobody cares.
Yeah, because you're up against the best people in the world here.
Yeah.
And in filmmaking and directing and writing. And and it's, you know, they always say, like, when you, in any other major in college, when you graduate, you like apply for a job, you know? And in the entertainment industry, there's no place to apply for a job.
It 100%. Took me years. I didn't really realize that, honestly. Like, I applied for jobs. I graduated and was like, okay, well, I'm gonna go get a job, and worked at, like, at corporations.
Monster.com.
Yeah.
I literally signed up for Monster.com.
Yeah, because that works.
Yeah, exactly.
Yeah.
Yeah, and it wasn't until years later that I was like, oh, a director doesn't have a full-time job often.
Yeah, I mean, that's something that, you know, Jesse, my husband, who produces the podcast, and I talk about frequently, is the difference between what you guys do as filmmakers versus actors. Is like, we actually get auditions.
Mm-hmm, sure.
And that's something that, you know, I think a lot of filmmakers really crave, is like, if I could just go to bat, like, I'm amazing at problem solving. Like, let me go to bat. I'll fucking, you know, if I can't knock it out now, I'm going to figure out how to knock it out. Because that's one thing that writers and directors are great at, is like solving problems, right?
That's the gift of commercials, actually. It is. That, like, you get sent boards and you're like, oh, do I respond to this? Mm. I can find a way to fall in love with it.
Yes. That's so true.
And the gift of just like, hey, this is the thing you're going to focus on for a couple days. Mm.
But it's the same exact barrier. You like, how do I get an audition for like an HBO miniseries?
Yes.
It's not right out of college. You get that.
No.
Unless
something happens. But
your parents are friends with some producer or something.
But honestly, the truth is, and this is what I say about on the podcast, which I do think is what makes acting so different than all the other art forms, is they say the real hard pill to swallow is that it really can just be magical luck.
Yeah,
can be. I believe a career sustained over a length of time isn't just pure magical luck, but you can have the right casting for the right trend at the right moment with the right training, with the right opportunities, and bam, out of nowhere, you hit some gold.
Yeah.
Right.
And
those are the people that we all grew up admiring.
Not only just grew up, those are the people that we still fixate, because now that the further in you go, the more you understand what the machine of publicity and what we're really doing here is selling this American dream. Which I know sounds really jaded, and I don't mean it to be, but it's, you know, the stories that actors are hearing of, you know, this luck of these pops. Mm-hmm. Well, of course those are the stories, because we're all perpetuating this idea of, you know, what I call the Harry Potter syndrome, that you just are inherently magical and nobody told you. And of course we want to feel that way. Sure. Like, who doesn't want to feel like we're the chosen one? And like, someone's just going to come up to us and be like, there you are. And I always say to actors, I say, I want you to be the chosen one. I really do. I want you to be at the Beverly Center. Mm-hmm. I want you to be at Union Square, Station 2, be on the train, whatever it is.
Yeah.
And I want somebody to just think like, wow, you are right for this role, and pluck you out and be like, are you an actor? And you're like, why, yes, I am. And then magic ensues,
right,
and you're,
there you go,
she's famous. But on the off chance that that doesn't happen, I think that it's important that actors know that there is, just like any business, real business structure that's happening here. And there is a way to, over time, take hold of a market and your place in it.
That's really fascinating.
But also, it's not an off chance that that doesn't happen. It's like the on chance. And I think there's like, this obsession with youth and like overnight wonders, like the Ryan Coogler's or the Diablo Cody's or whatever, that like just out of nowhere, they like made a huge hit.
Yeah.
But I read this statistic yesterday that I'm like 90% sure is fake.
Yes.
But it said that the average age of like a founder of like a super successful, like a mega successful tech startup is 45.
Yes.
Even though the person we picture is like the Mark Zuckerberg.
Yeah, it's 20. Well, the average age, I think that Jesse had done the research on this. The average age of selling your first script is 37. Is that what it is? Yeah, it's like 37. And that to be a staff writer is the number equivalent of making it into the NBA.
Oh, yeah. Yeah, no doubt.
But, like, why aren't they telling you that? Like, oh, hey, you want to be in... See, he's adjusting my sound. We warned him. Like, if you want to... Oh, you want to be a staff writer? Awesome. So you're trying to be in the NBA.
Sure.
Yeah, I think it would just be good.
Yeah, listen, but we want... I mean, that, there's a lot of people in the NBA. Like,
if
you spent your whole life working towards being in the NBA...
Sure.
Then that's your goal. And if you're spending your whole life trying to write film or TV, then...
If you're 25 and you're trying to be in the NBA, that's you're in real trouble. If you're 36 and you're trying to be in the NBA...
Sure.
You know, that's a... You see what I'm saying? There's like relationships and all that stuff.
Is an understanding about...
You subtract the physical requirements.
Right. No, but that's important is what I'm saying.
Right.
Right. I'm saying like you have a runway...
X amount of time to make it into the NBA. And right. You have more time to make it as a writer.
Yeah, you basically have to be like a teenager.
But the 25-year-old writer that I don't want to quit writing doesn't get that.
Sure.
The 25-year-old writer that I want to keep going because he's really... His stories are valuable. Like, he doesn't understand that it's just going to take more time because he's been sold that, like, he's magical instead
that
of, like...
the magic, yeah.
Instead of, like, there's... It's... You're trying to get into the NBA, and that's really hard.
Sure. Yeah, I guess it's interesting to think about the idea of being a staff writer as... Like, I feel like if you go to film schools now and you're hey, like, who wants to do
be
what
a staff
or whatever?
Writer.
Be
yeah.
a staff... Like, no one's Nobody. Like, hey, I want to be a baby writer on something, right? So, like, it, in a weird way, it feels like settling, I think, or that first real reality check of like, oh, this is actually... There's a tier to this. I'm not just going to sell my own TV show right out of the gate.
Yes, but that's, to me, so important for somebody to be telling everybody.
Sure,
Is that it's not that, you know, those 5 to 10 years, which I think are really important creative years, that, you know, between the decision to, you know, and I don't want to just talk to the people out there who are like graduating from college and then are wherever they are at in this thing, because there are a lot of people that I call like second generation artists, right? Like they had their first career in engineering and then they have their second career in whatever, right?
Podcasting,
right? That's a great successful financial world.
I have a 6-year runway off
yeah,
my engineering
work. Yeah, that's exactly right. That's exactly right. But, you know, those people too, and I actually find that the second generation artists, their second act artists is what I call them, actually come at it in such a wonderful way. Because they've already understood business and something else. Mm-hmm. They understood like business, marketplace, like the value of just like putting in your work over time, learning the lessons, you know, adjusting what you need to.
But they've never faced rejection in the way that we do.
Well, that's true. But I find that they understand that like it's not going to be easy in the beginning because they've already had a career where it wasn't easy in the beginning. Mm-hmm. Even though it was easier, the understanding of like, well, it takes time to build a career is something that like
they've internalized
authentically
already.
They understand.
Yeah.
They're also usually not 22, which makes it easier to, you know.
I think of the grad students in my, like, when I would be like around them as an undergrad.
Mm-hmm.
And there were always a few people like that are your second generation.
Second act. Yeah.
Second act. Thank you. Uh-huh. Second act artists.
Mm-hmm.
And as like a shithead teenager being like, well, who are these weirdos who are really taking it seriously?
Yeah, right.
I was like, oh, they just spent $45,000.
And they understand what that means.
Yeah, exactly.
Yeah, they're leaving their families to be here with us.
Right.
Idiots.
Yeah,
and they
exactly.
understand the cost of not only going to school, but the cost of not being in a profession in the years that you're in school.
Right.
Like that blew my mind. I was like, oh, it's not just expensive to go to college, but it's expensive because you're not in the working industry making money and learning actual experience and relationships. So that's fascinating. But for me, I feel that talking to artists and letting them know the game that they're actually playing is really valuable because I think, you know, they're smart, they're creative, they love to find problems, they love to just shoot it on a weekend, you know, like whatever it takes, right?
And it's a hungry group of people.
It's a famished group of people.
Yeah, and they can't afford food.
Yeah, they're so hungry. They're starving.
Yeah, I guess the one thing I just... thinking out loud, like the people that have kind of been in a corporate world or have had kind of regular careers before this might have more of an understanding that they need to create value in whatever work they mm-hmm. do. And I think a lot of young people come here and they're like, why aren't you giving me a chance? Like, why aren't you trusting? Why aren't you calling me in? Why aren't you giving me a call back? Why aren't you? And it's like they're thinking of everything from the perspective of like, why aren't you doing something for me? And there's this transition of like you thinking like, well, what am I contributing to this project?
Right.
You know, which is like a different mindset, and it's a business strategy. Yeah.
Yeah. I would say like that's to me a business mindset of like, what value am I adding? And like when actors come to me and they talk about agents and they, you know, nobody understands agents. I don't know how it is in the writer's world, but in the actor world, we're all like, we don't know what's happening back there, right? But there does seem to be real truth to like when people sign with certain agents, magically they suddenly get opportunities. They're not better or worse actors than they were yesterday when they didn't have that agent, but now suddenly they get those opportunities. Sure. And so wanting to like skip the line and get with those agents, and I'm sort of like, okay, but what do you offer so they can make money off of you?
Right.
And I find nobody's told actors, like, you don't understand. They're paying their rent on you. Who is like,
well, they're really paying their rent on packaging fees.
True, that's true. Well, now they are. That's it.
Hi-yo.
But also even that, packaging fees. Sure. Like, I'm getting inundated with emails, and I have friends who are on series. I have friends who book guest star after recurring guest star after guest star, and they can't get a fucking meeting. I don't know why I like suddenly
got...
At an agency. They can't get a fucking meeting.
Sure.
Right? And they're people that like, because there's always these excuses of like, well, they're only doing diverse. Well, a lot of these people are diverse.
Sure,
right?
Sure.
Or they're, you know, straight white men are out. Well, these are diverse women, a lot of them.
Right.
Can't get a fucking meeting. And I started being really horrified by that and scared. And then when I was able to sit down and talk to my contacts, and as you do, and get the scoop and find out about packaging, and the number that I was told is 85% of the roles are going into packaging.
And you were talking to agents?
I was talking to agents, managers, and casting directors that like 85% of the roles are going into packaging.
And by that you mean like if there's 100 roles in a movie, 85 of them are going to the people that are clients of this agency.
This agency or one of the agencies. So it's like if you know, if one of the showrunners is written by CEA and the other person is Innovative, then it's going down those branches. Right. And for me as a business person, I'm like, well, of course it is. If I'm Innovative.
But why would that prohibit an actor from getting a meeting with CAA or Innovative?
Well, because it's not about getting a meeting with CAA or Innovative. To me, it's about getting the agent before CAA or Innovative, right? It's like, how can I get with Gersh? How can I get with...
Gersh isn't so bad, you guys.
What? They're super great. Everybody loves Gersh. You know, but the agencies that
and
are like...
They're on.
But the ones that are really good, but aren't the ones that are known right now and being sued for intensive packaging, right? So... these agencies with packaging, what's actually happening is a lot of agents are quitting being agents and they're going into being managers because they can't make anything happen.
Right. Yes. Well, and you can also produce. It's like managing 100%. Is so much
managing
more fun.
Is so much more loose, right? Yeah.
Well, I think this is interesting. I'd love to hear your opinion, Matt. I think like as an actor, one of the things, and I'm not an actor, so feel free to correct me, but one of the things that you do when you first move to LA is... sure, you're trying to book roles and you're doing Groundlings, Recent Beer, short films, student films, whatever you're doing, but you're really trying to court an agent or a manager or a rep of some sort, right? You want to be in a showcase and you're trying to get agents there or renew this diversity CBS thing and everyone's going to be there and you might get reps. And it's like so much of your work is focused on getting representation because that's kind of the gateway to auditions. As a filmmaker, we have... agents and managers and lawyers and reps,
and you're firing them right now.
Yeah, but I feel like we're not.
Ixnay on the hiring pay.
We're not
Jay for real. Cut that part out.
But I feel like as filmmakers, we're not really making stuff for agents and managers in the way that actors
There's
are
not
like,
a
hey,
showcase
watch my reel.
Mentality. Exactly.
Well,
Yes,
and I would say to what I hear from writers and directors is they, you know, they really wish there was because they would love, again, the opportunity to show their work on a consistent enough basis that they could then compete. Because part of what's so hard about what you guys do, like I'm so glad that the next people you're having on are people who are actor producers, people mm-hmm. who've crossed over, because I
pro actors.
I die when actors come up to me and they're like, I'm just gonna make my own stuff. And I'm like, whoa, I want you to know, A, way harder, which they can't even fathom.
Sure.
B, way, way more expensive. Like, sure. You want to be in a movie, like, show up to the audition, maybe spend a few grand this year on workshops, maybe spend an extra couple grand on really good headshots, maybe do a few showcases, and stay in acting class. We're talking like a few grand of investment. You want to produce a short this weekend?
And steroids, right?
And so many steroids. It's one of my favorite things about this town. Yeah, he's on a lot of drugs. Whatever. Yeah, no cast him.
Yeah. Action. Yeah.
Felony?
Those
lots of drugs?
Don't come
bring him
working
on.
Out.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah, so I feel like... I love
the point. As a counterpoint, though, because I think it is important as a show called Just Shoot It. Mm-hmm. I've sat through plenty
And by the way, Audrey started her own podcast in her downtime
to help actors. Right,
I may.
Right, but also to fill.
Yes,
to be creative and productive
and make
things on your own without waiting for
but
people
how many
to hire
people
you.
Start podcasts that they're like, I'm just going to start a podcast. And you're like, you don't understand. Like, I mean, I did a podcast panel and they're like, oh, this is a podcast. And I'm like, I want you guys to know it's not easy. Like, it's not quick. It's not random. And what they want is something that's like, I'll just like do this thing. And then bam, I'm whatever her name is who created that. The British girl who created the
Phoebe Waller,
whatever her name is. Yeah.
Phoebe Waller.
And everyone's like, I'll be her now. Or before then it was like, I'll be Mindy Kaling. Like mm-hmm. everyone just thinks they're going to like.
Well, don't you think podcasts are like the new Twitter? Like, oh, Megan Amram made a Twitter.
Yeah.
Like, shit my dad says.
I guess.
And now it's like, here's my voice.
to me. Sorry. So there's
an hour and a half episode.
There's two things to think about. One, yes. I guess a lot of what you're saying is just like, hey, surprise. Entertainment is hard.
That's right.
And I guess I haven't been around people who are surprised by that idea in a while. Do you
Correct.
Know what I mean?
Yeah. You don't hang out with as many actors as maybe.
That is true.
I do.
Yeah, definitely. Yes. Of just like the, that.
Just
that
a naivete.
Naivete,
I make sure.
Exactly.
Yeah. I usually tell the ADs to have them not look me in the eye.
Right,
on the set.
That's right.
Yeah.
But, you know,
that's
I'll like right. write notes to them.
Yeah, right. Exactly.
Yeah.
Yeah. You'll have the AD
listen,
convey what you're talking.
They get the point. Yeah, they see my face.
Yes, exactly.
Like, he doesn't
again.
Want to talk to me. Yeah.
Again. Yeah, again. Exactly. Let me know when they did it right. I'll be
good
back.
This time. Good this time, please. sorry. So enough bits on being terrible to people. so there's that, which I get your point, right? Like mm-hmm. that is a thing that people need to like come to terms with, right? Mm-hmm. But then I think the flip side also is like maybe the thing you need to think about is like what your core competencies are besides acting, right?
I love that. I love that.
Because I want people to feel empowered to go shoot their own thing for mm-hmm. sure. Mm-hmm. But maybe that means putting together a team.
Mm-hmm.
Maybe that means writing it yourself.
Mm-hmm. Well, let's talk about writing. Can we talk about writing? Go ahead.
Yeah, I'm going to talk about writing. One of the most fascinating guests we've had on recently was this guy Sam Zwiebelman that mm-hmm. co-created Pen 15
mm-hmm.
with Maya Erskine and
Anna
Conkle.
Yeah. I listened to said episode.
Yeah.
And what was interesting about that one is that it's not like he pitched the show to them or they pitched the show to him. Mm. He saw them. He's like, you two are fantastic, hilarious actresses, actors.
Mm-hmm.
One of them is an actor. Yeah. One's an actress.
Right.
And they were like, let's get together and let's come up with a show that we can pitch and let's write it together. And I just like loved that idea because you see that show and you're like, oh, it's so genius. Like this must be their childhood. It's about mm-hmm. them. It's about this. And you realize like, no, we just got together and we're like, let's make something. And mm-hmm. that's what came out of it. Mm-hmm. And now he has another show that's like the exact same thing. He found this actress that he loved and they got together and they're like, what's a show that's going to hit in a way. And so I think like to what Matt's saying and to what you're saying is like, writing and showing your voice, but maybe teaming up with someone whose core competency is the camera work
but
or the editing.
What I love about the concept of core competency, which, you know, you should trademark that shit.
Sure,
that's
sure.
great. Okay, trademark.
I've never heard that term before.
What I love about core competency is that it's acknowledging, which is, I want you to know, hard for actors. It takes a special breed to be an actor. And listen, if you're an actor listening, you know that I love you. You're my people. But we're a special breed. And it takes acknowledging that maybe you're not good at everything.
Sure.
Yeah.
And to be an actor takes a really special blend of belief that you're just the most incredible thing that anyone has ever met.
Do you remember that episode of 30 Rock where Tina Fey is like dating John Hamm and he doesn't know that he can't speak French because he's so good looking?
Yes. Yes, that's what I'm saying. And
I'm pretty sure he can speak French.
I mean, clearly John Hamm was pretending he can't speak French, right, for the show. But it's one of these things that it requires a healthy dose of delusion just to pursue it. Right. True. And I'm fine with that.
Which is true for filmmaking,
for
too.
For sure. For sure.
But
for sure.
There's a difference, for sure.
The filmmaker friends that I know, you guys operate out of a sense of logic because structure.
We are less attractive and therefore people treat us differently.
Yeah. So you, it's true.
In a true way.
So you have to be smarter about it.
Yeah.
For
we
sure.
grew up having to prove ourselves in other ways. Listen,
we were like, there's a reason we're funny.
Yes.
Do you know what I mean?
Listen, I hear you. I understand. I get it. Whatever the root cause is, the effect is still the same. And I can't tell you the number of actors, you know, they write scripts and what they're really writing, and I know, you know, younger writers do this too, but what they're really writing is like their tantrum, right? They're writing their tantrum. They're writing their like
therapy.
They're writing their therapy, their vision board, you know, stuff like that. And it's actually completely lacking in something called structure, something called theme. So, you know, they don't even understand. But they're not doing that because they're terrible people. It's because we've not been taught.
Sure.
And the thing that like I also talk about on the podcast all the time is like story. And I've come to feel that like in Los Angeles, like seven people know story.
Sure.
Right?
Yeah.
And like none of them are actors. And it's not their fault. You know, we are raised and trained on
Jordan Peele's the
exception. Yeah, Jordan Peele is the exception. But we're raised and trained on the best work that's ever been written. We're training on Shakespeare, we're training on O'Neill, we're training on Pulitzer Prize. It's taken me 4 years with the top actors in the 1940s.
Right.
Right. And all you really do have to do is show up, be present and receive. And then your job is to receive direction. And there's 6 weeks of rehearsal to fucking shape you.
Yeah.
Well, that sounds magical.
Yeah,
hand me the best piece of writing that's ever been written. Give me 6 weeks to get it ready with the best actors. Let's see what happens.
Right.
That's the training program. And nobody's like, hey, actually what you're going to get is fake sides that were written by 3 o'clock in the morning by somebody who's on cocaine and super drunk at the same time. And we're not even going to use these sides. They're dummy sides.
Yeah.
Yeah. And the jokes don't make sense.
Or even more fun, like it's a commercial audition and you have no lines.
You have no lines. Right. I mean, I listened to your Amanda Linker Doyle episode and I love that they were talking about, you guys had a great conversation about the difference between commercials and theatrical. And it's like this fascinating thing to me where I'm like, help me help you. Please give me the spot ahead of time. Like, why you want me to drive all the way to Santa Monica, be in the wrong outfit, and then like I have to bring backup outfits in my car because you're business casual. And I'm like, well, that's one thing if I'm the joke. It's another thing if I'm the antagonist, like all these things. And I'm like, you're not Breaking Bad.
Yeah, sure.
Like, just give it to me.
Yeah.
Right?
The problem is that they were rewritten the night before because
I know.
Client didn't like
Listen,
them.
Listen. Right. 100%. 100%.
We
Fine.
Feel the same way.
I know you do. Everyone on the creative side feels the same way. But my point is that when it comes to story, actors, we have been taught in a way that really we fall very short. Mm-hmm. And that's why you have somebody like Bryan Cranston who gets up and is like, once I started telling the story and not worrying about being a good actor, but just telling the story, I couldn't stop working. And everyone's like, yeah, that. But everyone thinks they're telling the story. Mm-hmm. But because they don't know, like, that there's a protagonist here. Are you here to help the protagonist?
Mm-hmm.
Like, if you were out of this script, what would be missing from the script?
Right, right.
Nobody asks those questions.
My wife, she gets sides like for auditions all the time where we're like, what is this referring to? Like, is she saying that, is this a person's name or is it the word pajamas. You know, like, you just like literally have no context for this audition.
Well,
like,
should
we do it both ways?
Another of my favorite thing of the other podcast we'll all start creating, which is Living with Filmmakers, which is the number of times I work sides with my husband and he's so disinterested. And I'm like, I just feel like you're disinterested. Like, what's going on? And he's like, the writing's bad. It's bad. It makes no sense. They play the same beat three times. It's bad. It's not you. It's the writing. And I'm like, well, I still have to go in and do an amazing job with this terrible writing.
That doesn't help me at all.
And I need help.
We have the exact opposite problem where my wife's like, stop trying to act it. Just say
hilarious.
No, no, no. My wife is like, oh, man, you need to put a little something on this. Because I want to give like the softest read possible. I just want to be like,
you want to give it to her
neutral, and then like,
oh damn it, I don't want to be with
I mean anymore. that's hardly an exaggeration of what it sounds like. I don't want to pull focus at all.
That's
you know
hilarious.
What I mean,
because and she's like, help me,
the flip
story is too good behind right.
There's so many times though that you'll get a tape and you'll just hear somebody like acting their heart out on the other side. And it's like, oh well, you lost the role.
I think that's
how the podcast works, I suppose.
Is like, if an actor sent me an audition and they had a gun in their hand and they're sneaking around their garage and they're shooting and it's lit nicely, dude, I'd be like, this is fucking awesome.
Yeah.
I would, and Matt would save that and laugh at them later.
Yeah. So
that's hilarious. That's
really
because to me, an actor that is aware that they are in a film,
I want them to be in on the joke, but like when they feel amateur.
That's a different thing though. I talk to people about, especially self-tapes in specific, like, you know, it's so funny. Like, everyone's like, I hate self-tapes. But then everyone's like, all we do is self-tapes. I'm like, great. So that's the way we work in this town.
Yeah.
Right? So, you know, I say, like, if you're going in and out of frame because you don't know what you're doing, then that's different from going in and out of frame to make purposeful cinematic point.
Or because it's hilarious.
That's what I mean. It's hilarious to, like, pop into frame in the beginning and like it's gonna get you noticed,
and I would be like, no, I don't like this.
I'd be like,
but this is where it would be important to watch stuff that you've done already and go, you know what,
I pop people into frames in my stuff all the time.
Okay, then I wouldn't book your job, and then I would just be like, I don't know,
you just need to listen to our podcast.
Pop into frame in his audition.
Yeah, just like, I just want, I want to see your face and do the lines.
Yeah, what I really love is that you're doing this episode about a series about talking to actors, and I'd love to hear from you guys what that is about.
Well, we're still figuring it out.
Okay, good.
Kind of like actors in terms of their relationship with either also being creators or filmmakers.
Yes, I understand.
And also their relationship with filmmakers.
Right.
Yeah, I think that the podcast can be really business oriented, and so in an attempt to just get into the craft in a more specific way, but still keep the interview part, I think it was like, oh, let's just talk to some more actors and figure out what they like, what their questions are, what their misapprehensions are, how we can help work with them.
Yeah,
and then
that.
Hopefully, you know, our listeners are better for it.
They also maybe, I mean, this is not at all part of the thinking, but just the fact that they're probably better at promoting
that
they were on a podcast than
I have a fervent fan base.
Yeah, there you go.
They're a fervent group. Let me tell you about actors.
Yeah, yeah.
They are passionate.
Well, I want to go back to a question I asked Matt a little while ago, because I think writers definitely really care about having agents and courting agents, and that you write a writing sample and you try to send it to agents and try to get it read and get assistants to see it or whatever.
Yeah.
But directors, do you ever know directors that are making things to try to get an agent? I've never really heard that, but you hear actors and writers do it all the time.
I think that there's the thing of like doing the festival circuit and like,
yeah, but everyone knows that that's a hoax now.
Yeah, you know, it is and it isn't, right?
I think from our experience, it is.
Really. Yeah.
For filmmakers.
I would say that like submitting blindly to a place that you don't have any connection to is pretty rough. Yeah. But like,
oh, getting into a festival is a hoax, but doing the festival circuit, whether it's a Sundance or...
Well, sure. I mean, there's things like Sundance, and there's things like the Los Angeles Comedy Festival, Film Festival,
so nice, actually. I really love that festival. but yeah, no. There are good festivals and there are bad festivals. Mm-hmm. And then there are your AAA big time festivals.
Yes. But every festival, you either sell your thing, mm-hmm. or you meet other cool filmmakers,
awesome people.
Yeah,
or
cool.
you see how bad everybody else's work is and you feel better about being a
that's a very
creator.
Good way to look at
which
it.
Which is important, yeah. Because again,
it's
you're
like
only looking
booster.
At the best stuff, right?
Right, exactly. Yeah, that's important, I think.
I think there's a thing also of like with the shorts and the festival circuit stuff of like what we call Hollywood viral, right? Like I know plenty of filmmakers that like didn't get huge views on their Vimeo staff pick or whatever, or didn't even get a Vimeo staff pick, and they still got representation or some sort of heat because
right, like
you know,
Broad City is the famous example,
right?
That you bring
up. Yeah, but even like I've got a friend at Sundance. I have a short that didn't get into Sundance this last year, but he's
you're the one.
Exactly. But they still screen shorts every single Friday at lunch or whatever, right? So like,
yeah, they're like, I've only seen 1,300 shorts this week.
So true.
Not everyone who works at Sundance is a programmer. What I mean? Right. So there's still a lot of people who love film and aren't watching movies for a living. But just as an example, right? And so same thing, assistants have to like share things around and all of that stuff. So in that way, I think that there are ways that directors are hoping to get noticed. But I think also we're at a point in our careers where we know that agents just literally every single agent I've ever had came to me. And like every time I've ever solicited or like my manager has reached out to somebody different, it hasn't worked basically.
Right. And that's every filmmaker we've ever had or every listener we've ever had that's written us a question like, I just need to get a manager. I just need to get an agent. Mm-hmm. So we had my manager on 2 years ago. Mm-hmm. And I asked him if any of his clients were from cold submissions, and he said no, absolutely zero of them.
Yeah.
And I said, well, how do people find you? He's like, well, they're in my network. They somehow get to me, And I was like, well, how can our listeners get to you? And he's like, well, now that they listen to your podcast, they're in my network. So if you send the guys that just shoot it an email, they can forward it to me and maybe I'll look at their stuff. Mm-hmm. And people are still forwarding us that stuff. And I don't know. I think maybe one person, it might have led to like an email exchange.
Yeah. I mean, I would say most of our work, the vast majority of our work comes through a personal connection or network or someone seeing our reel.
That's why.
And
you can
not
cut
our
this.
Agents.
Right.
Aimed at like the new filmmaker, the new actor, like the misconceptions of what the industry is like.
Yes.
But I'd love to talk for a second about like more like the
journeyman
people. Yeah.
Yeah.
Like the us, like the people that have been here
sure.
10 to 15
your co-stars,
years.
Your guest stars, cranking on stuff.
Right. And a lot of it, and I'm curious, because from what I've heard on your podcast and our podcast, like I guess something that I think is interesting about your podcast is that you like talk about things you booked in your intro. And we also talk about it, but I'm like always kind of like hesitant to like,
to oversell it. We leave out for sure.
But also I just kind of feel like you can be in this business for 15 years and still be totally clueless. And so like, I don't think of me as an expert. I think of me as like having an opinion, you know, and very much
having some information, hopefully.
Yeah. I guess the biggest thing that I feel strongly about is that everyone's like afraid of gatekeepers and negative, like there's a lot of negativity and like, oh, they don't like me. And I think,
or even like Hollywood is so phony baloney.
Yeah. And I think that is something that we feel very confident trying to dispel because we've on many sides of the equation and know that every decision is made either by someone who, like a lot of people in power don't realize that, you know, actors don't like to sit on set all day when they only have a line at the beginning of the day and the end of the day, you know, like they're just clueless about it. Or that like, you know, you talk on your podcast, like in an audition, the director and the producer, they want you to be great just as much as you want to be great.
Sure.
Right?
Yes, right. Yeah.
Like they're not, it's not them versus you. So I think that's something we dispel. But in terms of like the way in or what you should do, or like you mentioned at the very beginning of this podcast that like casting directors hate postcards, but I know there's some casting directors.
Sure.
Yeah. Or not love them, but
they're helpful.
Like Sharon Bialy has this book, right? And she talked about postcards. And she's like, look, 99% of the time you send a postcard, I might glance at it and it goes in the trash can. But if I happen to be casting a part that you might be like uniquely good for, I'll give it to my assistant.
The magic that you were talking about before.
Right.
Like there is a, you know,
that slim chance.
Yes.
Right. And so in the way, is it worth the postage to you, basically?
Mm-hmm. Yeah. And in the way that Matt doesn't like when people pop into the frame, and I do like when people pop into the
sure.
frame,
mm-hmm.
like there's, to me, it's like none of us are experts. And, but I still want to talk on this podcast. And this is actually a problem that Matt and I had in the beginning of this podcast where we're like, we started getting the impression that our listeners and guests didn't really realize that we were even directors, you know?
Sure.
Because we were so kind of, we just never talked about ourselves mm-hmm. because we felt weird about it.
Or we also, you in an attempt to like try and empathize with people and talk about the struggle and
yes.
like what it takes right. to be a working director, people right. are like, oh, well, these guys aren't working at all.
Uh-huh.
And,
yes.
or you just don't want to sound like you're bragging. There's a anxiety that I think we have about being gurus. I think we talked to Ted Sim a little bit about
yeah,
it. Like,
I love
that's not
this
a thing
idea.
That we want to be in the slightest bit. Do you know?
Yeah.
And so,
and the reason I wanted to bring this up is because I think it's relevant to all people. Like, we were talking about before we started recording that there are new filmmakers that they made all these shorts and they were nominated for a student Oscar. They won their film schools or high schools like film competition, but they come here and they're like so embarrassed to say that they're directors because they don't make.
They're living as a director.
You know, or acting. Actors
right,
is
yes,
more so. Than,
right, yeah. Yeah, I mean...
Like, how do you find that in you to be like, hey, I'm fucking
I'm
working.
An actor? I think that... I think, for one, I really talk about on the podcast, don't for a second let the fact that there are many of us devalue at all what we do.
Mm-hmm.
And I have such an integrity point of view about that, that if you listen to any of my podcasts, it's clear as day that I really believe in what all of us sitting at this table do. I believe that people have really hard lives and they have hard days and they need to come home to entertainment and they need some relief.
Mm-hmm.
And I don't care if that's through like a really dazzling Grey's Anatomy episode, if that's through The Handmaid's Tale, whoever finds that relieving,
the
or
second Democratic
you know,
debate,
the second Democratic primary debate, or whether that's through Big Bang Theory. Like, it doesn't matter to me. I find all of it really valuable and is part of the beauty to me of like the life experience, like being alive. And I think I felt embarrassed maybe my first couple years here saying it because I was like waiting tables and I was like, I'm an actress. Mm-hmm. You know?
Where'd you wait tables?
Oh, so many places. I waited tables at a place called the Grand Lux Cafe, which was like,
ooh, yeah.
You remember
ooh,
the Lux?
That's a good one.
I got real.
At the bottom of the Beverly Center.
Oh,
yeah,
that
yeah.
was it.
Sure.
Yeah, no, that was real.
You couldn't have said a better place.
Oh, that was like, yeah. It's the place where everyone starts working.
Yeah,
it's
yeah.
like the Cheesecake Factory, that, yeah. right? And so there were a couple years, but I think, I don't know. I think I just got over it because my integrity and passion for the work is really hard to deny, I feel. And, you know, especially LA gets like a rap, right? Of like you said, of, you know, it's mm-hmm. soul sucking and nobody cares. And I couldn't argue with that more. I mean, I
yeah,
feel
without a doubt. Yeah.
that the people who are in this town who are doing the work are the most passionate, curious,
depressed.
Emotional, depressed, but also
sure, committed.
Committed,
the
right.
Yeah,
high,
yeah.
high, but with great lows come great highs, right?
Sure.
Like it's people who have the strength to withstand those two
mm-hmm.
differences, right? And the gap in between. And when I was able to really see it, I could also see a difference in my approach to a lot of actors. I've mm-hmm. never, you know, obviously I have a fucking podcast that I do to take up my time, right?
Sure.
So like, I've never given a halfway lazy, apathetic, just whatever I want to do, hang out, attack on my work. I've mm-hmm. only ever been in this all the way. And why I have the podcast is I felt like I've been in this all the way for so long and never mm-hmm. saw results. And then I started understanding that there was like a business here to be figured out and strategies to be handled mm-hmm. that are like known business strategies
right.
that I just
buy
didn't
low,
know about.
Sell high.
Right.
Yeah.
But I guess from an applicable point of view, do mm-hmm. you find that when you found that confidence to say, like, I'm an actor. I booked this thing and I booked this thing. And I had 3 bookings this month and I'm doing a commercial and I'm doing this feature. That when you started talking to people like that, do you find that it turned them off or that it made them more likely to want to hire you or look at your work and be interested in who you are? Because I know as a filmmaker, like if you're at a party and you just meet some random person, you're talking, you're waiting in line for to do a keg stand.
Yes, right. All you ever do.
Weekday night.
Normal dad behavior.
Yeah. When you're like, yeah, I kind of direct a little. I'm trying to direct, you know, but I mostly edit or whatever. Mm-hmm. Versus saying like, I'm a director, you know.
Yes.
I just had a shoot and I have a shoot last week. That they're more likely to go check out your website or your work with the second story.
Here's the thing. If you're in that environment, you're like waiting for the keg stand. You say, oh, I'm a director. The follow-up question inevitably, same with an actor.
Yes. It's like, what have you done?
What have you done? And if you have an answer that satisfies that, then I think it's the same result without feeling quite so anxious about like name-dropping necessarily.
Right. Well, I would be like, have you heard of Audrey Moore?
Yeah,
sure.
I have her on my podcast. Audrey Hills. I mean, Godless. Legit though, I want you guys to prepare yourself. The moment this goes live, anywhere you go where there's an actor, they'll be like, oh my God, you were on Audrey Helps Actors. Like, they will literally attack you. I've been given the feedback that that's true. Okay, so what I was going to say about that is, this is actually part of the mission of the podcast, honestly, is to get rid of this embarrassment and shame about where you are versus where you think you should be. And having an understanding of like, what is a realistic expectation? Mm-hmm. Because I now, sitting on this side of my career, look at people on whatever side of career they've had. And I find this to be true, and I'm sure you do on the directing side too. Nothing but empathy and understanding, actually. Like, I just look at them and I'm like, oh yeah, no, I know where you are. That's hard. You know, or like, oh yeah, no, I know where you are. That's exciting. I hope something comes of that.
Check, please.
I'll take the check, please.
Right. But we've both also seen people that are like, hey, check out my web series. Have me on your, you know, like
directors
actors. Like, you should cast me, and you see what they've done so far, and you're like, you're not ready, right? Like,
you see, that's a really hard thing, because the you're not ready thing is something that, again, I'm really trying to open actors' eyes to, because there's so much delusion about an entitlement about what you're really qualified for. And, you know, I'll say to them like, well, you know, how many auditions did you have last year? And they're like, 20. And I'm like, well, what happened? They're like, I didn't book any of them. And they're like, okay, well, those aren't great statistics. Like, there's a problem to be solved here. Mm-hmm. And this thing that you just said of, well, you're not ready, is going to be really triggering to a lot of actors, because they're all scared deeply that they're not ready. And also, they're all being, not all of them, many of them are being lied to by their acting teachers. They're being lied to by people who maybe don't even know better, right? Mm-hmm. And
who are trying to be encouraging.
Who are trying to be encouraging.
Sure.
Or don't even know better and just think like, you're great, right? And don't understand that there's a difference between being really great in your scene study class and then that translating into you being outstanding in an audition that will then book you a job. Right? Mm-hmm. And the panic and underlying fear that you're not ready and nobody's telling you is very real for actors.
Mm-hmm. I'm and sure. So I don't, even though it could be true, right? Like, to me, especially on a commercial, when you have an actor that's never been on set before, it takes longer than an actor that has been on set before.
But see, that's really hard for actors to swallow, because they feel like so insecure about that truth, because they're in so much shame and frustration about the fact that they're not ready, and they're so angry that nobody's being honest with them. And I don't know why people aren't being honest with them. I mean, Jenna Fisher, you know, if you've read her book, and she talks about, I wonder if it's because everyone's really nervous about being that director that told her, like, if she's not willing to get naked in this town, she'll never work. Like, everyone's really nervous that you say that to the actress that then gets famous and writes a book about what a jerk you are, right? But I feel that actors are starving for somebody to be like, that wasn't good enough. You're not ready. And it's not because you're bad. It's not because you've done anything wrong. It's because you actually haven't put your hours into that skill. Mm-hmm, and go and put your hours into that skill and you'll be ready.
I would never say you're not ready, but I would say like, hey, can you send me like 3 things you've done before for me to watch? You know, like,
right.
Which, but I'm, you might, I'm trying even to say like, hey, if you've never done anything before that you can send, that you feel.
But
you
see, I find me. With actors, it's delusion. Again, they'll go like, oh, but he asked for more of my material.
Oh, that's without
what, a doubt. Right. That's what they'll tell me is like, and then this director, and he asked for more material. They'll never hear like, I didn't have anything to send him. And then I'm like the one who's like, great, so did you send him anything? And they're like, well, I had done this short thing with my friend, like in our apartment. And I think it's pretty good.
Yeah,
and
yeah, there's like, some stuff that I'm proud of.
No.
Yeah, or I mean, Orin and I, we have, I'm trying to think of what episode it is. Mm. But we had a long conversation about auditions and what the most sympathetic action can be, because I am like, hey, thanks so much. Good, you know, like one take, we're done. Mm-hmm. Whereas Oren likes to give them the shot of like,
I like get nervous that the actor like, outside, they're like, they heard that they had 3 takes.
So oh, yeah.
Yeah, sure, sure, sure. Yeah. And again, it's because we're both married to actors, so we're just trying to figure out like what's the most empathic way to
handle this.
Handle this, exactly. Yes,
exactly.
Yeah.
I can't answer that question. I wish I could. But I will say that what I really encourage actors to do is to gather more data. Mm-hmm. Because if they have an audition with you and, you know, it goes really well, but they don't book anything, that to me is like not enough data. If they have 20 auditions that they think is going really well, but then they don't even get a pin or an avail or anything, then that to me is, well, there's something to be looked at. And it might not even be talent related. For commercials, it's often like cut your hair. That's all it is, right?
Well, the commercials, it's so...
so random.
So random. I don't know that there's data to really be mined, honestly, because... And I don't mean to undermine anything.
Yeah, but, no, I understand.
But I've said explicitly, this is the only actor worth casting.
Yes, and they've gone.
And they've gone with someone else.
Listen,
many times, people who I've disliked have gotten cast.
Right,
and like, you know, sometimes people are like, I don't like the way that person looks, and it's because their ex-wife looks like that person.
What's really important about commercials, and you're with actors, so you understand this. What's very different about commercials that's good for feedback is you do get callback numbers and you do get avail numbers, and they put like 8 actors on avail now. So those are now really great data numbers to know that you're working properly.
I try to put people on avail,
but there's still I try to put as few people on avail as possible.
Yeah, and I only put them because Kara is like, even she just auditioned for Jordan Brady. He texted me. He's like, oh, I just saw your lovely wife.
Oh, yeah, that's nice.
And then he's like, she's lovely and hilarious. And then she's like, oh, he could have at least put me on avail.
Veil.
And I was like, yeah, I guess he could have just like literally as like, because to her agent,
right,
that looks,
sure, that looks good. Better.
Yeah, yeah.
Yeah, I mean, I guess that's the thing. But to me, it still is more feedback. And theatrically used to have callbacks. And we don't have that anymore. And that used to let your reps know that like you were working properly, which, as you know, as directors, is just really what you can do. Like you can work really properly, do your best work. And at the end of the day, what works for the story based on which actor they grabbed for what offer for then some casting of some essence, sort of mishmash it together and we'll see what the fuck we got, right?
I get really nervous about trying to dig too deeply in things that, from experience on the other side, are just so random and so hard to really parse data from that it makes me
nervous.
Yeah, exactly.
I understand.
Because I know how emotional it is.
Totally. You
know what I
mean? Yeah. Because we talked about what actors, I think, find helpful for directors. What is it that you would like to say to a fervent group of actors of all levels that you can communicate to them? No hard feelings, no pressure.
Don't email us your headshots.
Yeah, no, that's for sure true.
Yeah, don't email me.
Yeah,
for sure.
I will actually like.
You
can
email
really...
me. You can email me if you want, like a download link. That's okay.
Good. Here's what I say about the emailing, and we should actually really do this because it's a thing. Is just listen to me, you guys. If to the Audrey Helps Actors listeners, I say this every time I have somebody on that I feel like, just be careful. Is that it's actually not great. That if you do that, what it does is it floods their emails, and then that's more time that they have to spend and more to delete on. And I just ask you to really respect their time And the better way to do it is, you know, go to their live show, listen to their podcast.
Come say hi.
Come say hi. All of that sort of stuff. But if you're like, you know, cast me in your thing, like, I just am always talking to you guys about really trusting in a natural evolution of relationship over enforcing yourself into somebody's space.
Yeah, without a, and with the caveat, if we know each other, if we got to know each other, we worked together a bunch, if we were friends.
Like, I heard you on Audrey Helps Actors.
Sure, sure. Right. Yeah, that stuff is fine. But like, otherwise, you know.
Yeah, no.
But honestly, if someone emailed me and said like, hey, I listen to your podcast and I like this thing and thanks for doing it, that would be totally normal. But if someone, I mean, the emails that I've gotten a lot, and I'm sure it's just people looking up on IMDb Pro, people like 1,000 directors' email addresses, is like, hey, I'm, you know, I'm in LA and I'm looking for work and here's my resume and here's my headshot. I've never once, like, ever called in.
I love that.
Or I'll get the email of, like, I know I'm definitely right for this role.
Nothing turns you off more, right?
Nothing. Yeah. Literally, like, you're blacklisted.
Yeah, I think it's this interesting thing.
Like, I will remember you, but not the way you want me to.
No. Yes.
I will not remember you.
I think it's this interesting thing that I've experienced of, like, the show that you are dying to get on, you're just never going to be on. You're just not going to because you're too passionate about it and it scares everybody. Instead, anything else you want to say to them?
I would, you know, I was making the joke before. I think that it's hard for actors, especially when they're first getting smaller roles. I'm probably not going to talk to you too much, and that's kind of a good thing.
Yeah, right.
Which is a hard thing to hear for sure, but we've got a lot of stuff on our plates, and so I really actively try to remind myself of where actors are emotionally, and I try my best to go out and like reach out to them, but sometimes it's not going to happen. You know what I mean? It, like, sometimes I'm going to miss it.
Yes.
And so when I say moving on, that really does mean everyone did a great job. And like, let's now go. We get to go do the next thing.
Yes.
And so it is the highest compliment I pay everybody across all departments. Because I'll keep shooting until we get it right.
Yes.
And so I'm sorry if I don't make the time sometimes, you know, or if I get pulled away or whatever, you know.
Yeah, I love that.
I'll add two things about auditioning. One, and you probably have covered these ad nauseum on your podcast.
I love it. But it's good to hear for them to hear it from not me, right? Sure.
Yeah.
So number one is like, if I'm eating and your audition has nothing to do with you, I've seen 40 actors that day. Yeah, like no one's ever said anything to me, but I've my actor friends have been like, ugh, he's like eating a sandwich and answering emails during my audition. Like, first of all, if they're not paying attention to your audition, they're probably not the decision maker.
That's so important because you'll see six assholes on their phones or on their laptops even.
So don't let that. Don't worry about it. Don't worry about it. Easier said than done, but try to not let that throw you. Because they wouldn't waste their time.
And it also bothers us. Like, we want them to watch as well.
To me, I've told producers, like, hey, if you want to talk, like, they'll whisper during an audition. I'll be like, that is absolutely not acceptable during an audition. If you want to talk, if you want to be on your phone, if you want to email, if you want to text, I prefer you don't, but that's okay. But like, there's no whispering, you know, during an audition or even like walking in or out of the room. But eating is just something we have to do during the day. And the reason we're eating in the room is because we've spent too much time with the actors, you know?
Right, right.
And then
I'd rather audition a couple more people and eat a sandwich in front of you than like send people home.
Right. You know? Yes. But I think when you're talking about that, you're talking about commercials.
Sure.
Like, there aren't a lot of producer sessions even happening anymore where it's like you and the producer theatrically.
Sure.
And then you're just like so hungry you have to eat the sandwich.
Yeah, yeah. That's true. That's
correct?
True.
Yeah, when I've done theatrical or like even more branded series stuff, I mean, I always like to see as many actors as I can possibly see. So yes. And I'm always hungry.
No, that's true.
Was there a second thing?
My second thing is, and again, this might be just a me thing, but like the order you're auditioning in makes a huge difference to whether,
tell me about that.
Like whether I'm going to be interested in what you're doing. If you're the first person of the day,
it's toast.
First of all, it's not toast, but I'm probably going to redirect you a lot. I'm going to try things out. And I always try to tell actors, like, just so you know, you're a first person for this role. So we're just kind of figuring out. We're going to try different things.
Just so you know, actors know that. And then casting directors have had a lot of problems because if you know you're first, you'll show up late. And then it starts the whole session late.
I've cast people the first person.
You can. It's like setting the precedent. It happens. But we know that, like, we're all working it out.
Right. Sure. But I don't think that's especially, it's actually to me one of the best auditions because I get to see if you're taking direction. I get to see if you're adding to the blocking. Mm-hmm.
You
or
get
doing
to
things.
Learn to like them.
Yeah,
I you see. Know.
Mm-hmm.
But I prefer you don't go too off script if you're the first person because I want to see if my
it
script
works.
Even works. Yeah.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
If you're the last person of the day, it's like I've seen this 100 times. So like, that's when the sentimentality can really bug me.
Yes.
You know,
yeah.
Because I've seen 40 different actors, and if you think like. Like, oh, it'd be really funny if I took a bite in the middle of this or, you know, or did like odds are that we've already seen it. So like, don't be overly proud about like these little improv moments.
Uh-huh.
A button is fine, but it's not going to get you the job or not get you the job.
I'm okay with a button sometimes.
Yeah.
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 Like late in the day.
But
like,
yeah, but
anything
late in
to spice it up. I understand. And I feel like actors hear that all the
time. Yeah. Right? I mean, I know, especially as a commercial actor, like I do have my, luckily I have my hand in both pots. I've stride both lanes. I don't know what the metaphor is, but I do work in both fields.
It's thumbs
crossover.
And pies.
Crossover. Yeah. Sure. I do crossover a lot. And I know that like my job commercially is really because none of this is going to make it into the commercial. It's just so that everyone there feels like Audrey's great.
Right.
She's entertaining. Sure. She's great. She'll come up with some stuff maybe if we need her to.
Right.
You know.
And I also like to see that she knows how to read the room. Like some rooms are like, hey, how are you doing? How's your day going? How's the weather? How's the traffic? Other rooms are like, okay, can you stand on your mark and slate?
Yeah.
And by the way, I'm almost never paying attention during the slate because that's the only time I can like be sending emails and things. And it's like not important at all how you slate.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, I feel like there's a lot of like weird pressure on actors to like slate the right way or whatever.
Yeah, that's a different thing though. Yeah, that's again like, weird teachers teaching weird stuff that doesn't exist anymore.
Yeah.
And also,
it's so strange.
Hand don't
shake. Touch
if you try to shake still my shaking hand, your hand, is that a thing?
To me, it's the number one giveaway that you haven't auditioned a lot.
Okay, let me talk to my.
We do. And very unfortunately, and very sadly, and much to against our will, we do work with a lot of non-union actors, and a lot of them will come shake your hand.
So a lot of them are what we call not non-union, but we call them pre-members because they will be members someday.
Sure,
it's only a matter of time. And so listen. About the handshakes, if no one's told you yet, don't do it. He's absolutely right. It's the biggest flag that you're green, that you want to shake anyone's hand. So do yourself a solid, look like a pro, and never, ever, 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 ever shake anyone's hand. You like
unless they come
if they
to
reach
you.
Out. Yeah.
Yeah.
If they reach out, don't be like, ugh, you know. But other than that,
I'm sick.
And then I have one last question. When it comes to directing and casting, this is I think a big thing that actors really are just in a kerfuffle about as far as like relationships and what relationships you focus on and what you make is there's a lot of I'd say points of view about like go shoot your own stuff, go work with other actors, go work with directors, go, you know, build those relationships versus what, you know, which I would call like side door relationships versus like go meet with casting directors, go make impressions with casting directors, build those relationships and put your focus on that. Now for you, your wife got started so early in the business that it's a different game for her. But, you know, how much of what I'd love to give like a percentage rough estimate, how much of what you cast, the actors that you have actually cast have been people that you never knew, that you never saw, who came into the room and blammo blew you away. And how much of them is you've known them before, either that you've seen them in another audition and they did a great job, you know them personally, you've worked with them before, something like that.
For me, non-union jobs, 95%, I have no clue
who they are, great.
SAG jobs, probably more like 50%.
You know who they are. Yeah.
Yeah. I think that's probably around correct for me.
Mm.
But I will say if Chrissy and Amanda are like, oh, you're going to love this one.
Yes.
I will pay 10 times more attention. Yeah, yeah.
I definitely agree with that. That to what degree are you, when a casting director like them comes to you and says that they're passionate about somebody, to what degree does that ever have an influence over your casting decisions?
I mean, a huge.
That
like, like, like the.
Giant-
most valuable, I would say. And that's partially
great. It'll make a difference between a callback and no callback, for sure.
Will it make a difference between a booking and no booking?
I've had plenty of... I don't work with a ton of casting directors, but the ones that I like, I love, you know? And so I take their opinions very seriously.
So it's interesting.
For me, only as a tiebreaker. It's between two people and they're like,
great.
Well, we worked with this person. We get great feedback on them. Yes. But if it's like, here's our 1, 2, and 3, and they're like, oh, this 3 person, he just booked this thing and he's going to blow up and he's the Geico guy.
You're like, nah.
I'm like, I'll bring that up. Maybe I'll think about it. I'll look at their other work, but I don't think it would.
But see, you said you don't work with casting directors that often, and that to
many different casting.
That many different.
Oh, that many different.
I'm a loyal person.
I understand. I love that.
Yeah. No loyalty.
Good. So, do you have a problem of them bringing all the same talent in all the time?
No, but I will sometimes say, "Hey, bring in some ringers."
Yes.
Like, and we're also conflating like scripted versus commercials,
right?
Like in a commercial situation, like, you know, sometimes people think they know what they want and then, you know, we brought in entirely wrong people and I'll be like, hey, like, you know, so-and-so, you need to like
bring your game up.
Bring some people in. Like, this is going to be a problem. Yeah.
And every project is different in terms of how close we are to the final say.
Sure.
Sure.
Right.
Yeah, yeah.
Because sometimes you don't get the final say.
Yeah.
How? Usually, I mean, but theatrically you do, or theatrically it's up to producers sometimes too?
Theatrically, I don't know. I mean, you know, we've both done shows for this company, New Form, that does like digital shows, and they really care about Instagram followers.
Yes, that's right.
And so to them, it's like, this person was amazing, this person less amazing, but has a huge following and will do so much for publicity.
Fame is important.
It is. It's marketing.
Yeah.
Yeah.
It is important.
Yeah. So,
and like, I will never choose the marketing angle for me personally.
Yes.
But
they will.
Yeah.
Yes.
Yeah. I think we also, you were saying like, can you think of any director that's only just a director? Mm-hmm. We're all also producing, right?
Yes, that's right.
I need people to see my show. And so I have to make that calculus of like,
well, yeah, I'll use it to sell an actor many times. I'm like, Anne, look at Audrey. She has a podcast. Sure.
Yes, no, that's right.
But
right.
I'm saying like, even if I'm like the decision maker, if they're like, Anlo, pick whoever you love best. Mm-hmm. Like, I still have to know, like, I need people. If people don't see this thing, it's going to be a real problem.
Because
I'm going to spend a year of my life like busting my ass on it.
Can I just like, for my listeners, really make a point about that? Because I really want them to understand that like by the time you get to casting, a year is fast. Like, it's usually like a 4 to 8 year process, right? So like if a year has happened, right, for a feature. So like if you've gotten to it in a year, that's quick. And it's your career too. And you need it to go and you need it to get seen. So it's not being cast with that other actor, you know, who has more credits and has this maybe better agency, just like random willy-nilly just to like spite you. It's like...
It's not like, we want the popular kids versus the underdogs.
Yeah, yeah. I love the way you put that. Yeah. It's not that we want the popular kids versus underdogs. It's like, I need my project as part of my career to go. Mm-hmm.
Without
a
doubt. Yeah.
And this may give it a better shot in doing so.
Yeah.
I'll say one thing I do, even though it's not super easy or fun, is if I ever call in an actor for an audition, I will, and they don't get it, which is most of the time, then I'll email them and be like, hey, thanks for coming in.
Yes.
You're awesome. This is why you didn't get it.
Well, I love that. I mean, I can take a few seconds to talk to your listeners about what actors really love. First of all, if you have an actor who's worked a small role at the end of the day, please give them a hug and tell them how great they were. I always tell this to Jesse the other time. I'm like, I don't care if they weren't great. You don't know why they weren't great today. Maybe they're great all the time. Maybe like you said, they're green, whatever happened. But we're vulnerable people at the end of the day. and directors, yes, and actually, yeah. And directors, you guys are so in your heads about what's the next thing and the next thing and the next thing. And I also think like actors don't understand that you guys are like bears, where you're more scared of us than we are of you. And so like the communication can often be very weird.
I always joke, and it's insensitive, but the nicest thing I say to an actor is moving on.
Yes, I know. Right. And I literally used to go to shoots where I was paid great money to act. And when they would keep moving on, I would think like, oh, God, they're just so.
I'm not going to make the final cut.
Yeah, well, I just think like they just don't even care about me. Yeah, yeah. And then reverse, if they spent a lot of time, I would be like, God, they're just not getting it. Like it doesn't matter which way sure. it goes, right? Yeah. So that I think is very important for actors. You know, this email, I love that. I think that's beautiful. I don't think that's realistic.
I only do it if I'm like, hey, I saw this, I worked with this actress. She's great. Let's bring her in. Yes. She's a little old for the role, but let's just see what she does.
Let's see what she does. Right.
And then she doesn't get it because she's a little old for the role. Right. I'll email and I'll be like, hey.
Just FYI.
I just thought you were really amazing.
Have you tried to be younger?
Yeah. Right. Right. I mean, those are wonderful. And I had an acting teacher used to tell me I should make a folder of those. I used to just get lots of them, you know, rejection letters, emails. But I do think that if you're having a communication with an actor that they feel, it's so interesting. I think unless you're an actor, you can't really know it. It's this hyper-awareness, hypersensitivity that comes about. And to whatever degree you can be gracious, yet it's a hard thing, gracious yet direct. Mm-hmm. I think we really love. I know that like there's a lot of directors out there who are like, I'm going to be an asshole and get something out of you.
Sure. Yeah.
But wow. I find we're just like children. You know, we like clear.
Mm-hmm. Well, clear can I ask you a question, like a specific question? So I have a friend of a friend that was like came to audition for something. And in his audition, he was obviously nervous and he like just moved, like kind of clapped his hands a lot.
Yes.
In a way that just felt like he was not ready. That's what I mean by not ready, right?
I see what you're saying.
Like, this is like your 7th audition, and I want it to be your 70th audition.
Yes.
Right? And he emailed me, and he asked for feedback. Like, hey, thanks so much for having me.
I would give direct feedback.
You would say you clapped your hands too much, and it seemed awkward?
I would exactly do that. I would exactly do that because the people who are giving us feedback are mostly, for being a working actor, is talked to stuff like that. Because a lot of people teaching us are not currently working. They're not, and I mean currently working. Like I know acting teachers who've like stopped working in the last, who've stopped, you know, pursuing acting in the last like year or two, who are already giving out of date feedback. Mm-hmm. And I will hear their out of date feedback. And I'm like, that's not right anymore. Right.
What
like
about?
Just mail that VHS.
Yeah,
let's
exactly.
adjust it though, because I think there's something very prescriptive about like, hey man, you were clapping. That's weird. Stop it.
Yes.
Something that would be a lot harder to take. Let's talk about that, right?
I love that.
I assume you still would be like, oh, listen, like, you know,
you felt like you were saying the line, like reading the script as opposed to like,
because I think actually that actors, when they're given a note that they know is true, it's not offensive. They might be ashamed that they're not ready yet because it's a shock confront.
I guess we don't want to embarrass them.
Right. But I find when communications to any artist come from a real desire to help you, not a desire to be smarter than you, not a desire to smash you down, not a desire to of ego, but really like, hey, I just want you to know, I don't think you're ready quite yet. I think you could probably use some hours in like an on-camera audition class. I don't really know of one, but I think maybe you were a little moving a little bit too much. Mm-hmm. And the other actors just had a sense of ease that in the callback you didn't bring. I can tell you as an actor, I would have been over the moon. Because for one, it's real honesty back from somebody who's in the buyer position and not in the seller position. And that's a very specific difference. And two, somebody cared enough about me to give me honest, helpful direction in the growth of my craft. And I think we're all starving for that.
Yeah. Yeah. It's so interesting because even just hearing you say that, I totally see and acknowledge how valuable that could be and how scary it feels to be the person to deliver that to someone.
Yes.
Do you know what I mean?
I do, because I do talk to actors all the time. And, you know, a lot of my episodes are what I call leveling up episodes. So they're talking to actors who want to get to the next level. And I literally will watch all of their material and I go through all their stuff and I'll say like, you don't know how to audition yet. Mm-hmm. But it's always followed by, have you spent any hours learning how to audition? And they'll always say, I mean, some. And I'm like, some meaning like you've auditioned a few times, right, or some meaning like, right, compared to your scene study hours, what are we talking? And they're like, oh, yeah, probably like 5 hours. I'm like, great. You think 5 hours of learning how to audition is...
makes you a professional auditioner.
Right. Do you see what I'm saying? And because my intention is so like, because I'm fighting for them, and I feel so many people are just out to take your money, and I'm like fighting for you to learn and to get the career that I believe you really deserve, but you can't get because you've spent 5 hours learning how to audition. And right, nobody will say to you, I think you need to learn how to audition.
Yeah.
Well, something that I think you say on your podcast, which I found fascinating, and I think equally applies to filmmakers and writers and directors and actors, is that like Olympics comparison. Yes.
Oh, yeah.
Which is like, if you want to be an ice skater in the Olympics, I mean, you brought up the NBA earlier. Mm-hmm, mm-hmm. Like think of being an actor or a director as that, or a writer as that. Mm-hmm. Like, are you eating, breathing, waking up at 5 a.m. and going to the ice skating rink to write your pilot?
Yes. And I even want to especially say that about the difference between the professional's pursuit and what I think could be a hobby, passionate pursuit. Mm-hmm. And I'm devastated that so many people feel bad about the idea of any of it being a passionate hobby pursuit, because a lot of people are very, like, they're filled in their life and spend thousands of dollars on incredible hobbies that they are really passionate about.
I think as artists, we forget about hobbies. Yeah. When I went full time.
No, I know that that's true because I'm married to one and no hobbies.
Yeah. Let me recommend pinball.
Yes. Or that's my main hobby. Cigar aficionado.
Yes. Whatever it is.
Just something you can zone out to.
Geode hunting.
That's actually exactly what I'm talking about, because like, who's going to make a living out of geodes? Like, only a few people, but most people, like, it's a
you
great...
have to live in a tourist trap town.
Right. Yeah, yeah. But for most people, it's like a passionate, exciting hobby that like brings them to life. And I say to them, whether you're a director, whether you're an actor, whether you're a writer, like, okay, do you think you're operating at Olympic level, honestly? And also, when you sign up to be the Olympics, everyone... If you're going to tell your family, like, I'm going to be an Olympic skater, that's not just a commitment on your end. That's a commitment to all of them as well. It's a financial commitment. Mm-hmm. They're not mad that you're not coming home for Christmas because you're trying to qualify for the Olympics.
Right.
And they're in
just
your
like
corner
when you
for
book
that.
A great role.
Right.
They're not mad that you're not coming
suddenly,
home for
right.
But, Hanukkah or Christmas.
Exactly. They're forgiving suddenly. But I feel like if most people understood that what you're actually trying to do is qualify for the Olympics, and they can make an educated choice about whether or not they want this to be a professional pursuit or they just really like ice skating.
Mm-hmm. Right. Yeah. Well, on that note.
Just shoot it and ice skate it out.
Yeah. Well, cool. Well, thanks so much for talking
to
us.
Yeah. Thanks for having me on, you guys.
Should we endorse some things?
Unpaid endorsements. I'll lead with Midsommar.
Oh yeah, you loved that.
Boy, I really loved it.
Is it a horror film?
So
genre-y soft horror?
It is. There's plenty of gore.
Yes.
However, I would say the actual scariest, quote unquote scariest stuff happens relatively quickly. I don't think it's a spoiler to say that it lacks suspense. Mm. You know, you figure everything out very, very quickly. You figure it out from the trailer.
So is it just kind of eerie and concerning?
Mm-hmm. Mm. Yeah, yeah. Mm-hmm. It's like it's like a little bit of a fever dream.
Interesting.
And the more I think about it, the more I like it. It's shot incredibly well. The visual effects are really great. The performances are all incredible, actually.
Yes.
And then since I already talked about how I was going to endorse it, I'll also double down. The Farewell is also really great. These are movies that this episode is like... they're not going to be in theaters anymore.
They'll be like, right, we'll rent it.
But
we'll
rent them. Yeah. Yeah, they're exactly. Probably on their way. So
good.
The Farewell is really wonderful as well. Movies, you guys.
Yeah. You know, directors, you guys love your movies.
Yeah. It's easy to forget, though. Yeah. You know, there's a lot of great TV shows out there as well.
Yeah. It's true.
Audrey, what you got?
My new favorite TV show, which we're having a really great time watching, is The Boys on Amazon.
Oh, yeah.
Have you tried it yet?
I haven't. I remember the comic and being like...
Oh, it was a comic. Of course
yeah.
It was.
Yeah.
Did you know it was a comic? No. Fascinating. Interesting.
It's Seth Rogen EP, right?
Yeah.
Producer.
Right.
And it's about like, it's like a superhero comedy.
Yeah, it's basically a superhero dark comedy.
Like, we can do whatever we want. We're superheroes.
No, you don't. I think what's so great about it, I mean, it just goes into whether or not you can actually digest things that are actually really clearly about Hollywood or not. Mm-hmm. You know, like we have to stop watching, we couldn't watch Party Down after one season.
Oh, man.
It's too devastating.
Season two, you got to get into it.
No, we can't do it. But The Boys does a really good job at, in sort of a sci-fi fantasy fiction way, taking my world of our world of Hollywood and all of the mess and lies of it all and turning it into a comic book TV show so that all of that reality is slightly more digestible.
Oh, interesting.
Yeah, it's very fun.
I haven't heard that read before. That sounds
good. Oh, it's very
more
clearly
appealing. Oh, interesting.
Well, thanks, guys.
Yeah,
thanks
thank
for
you.
Having
Audrey.
Me over.
Yeah, this was great.
So, it was a pleasure.
Obviously, we can find the podcast Audrey Helps Actors everywhere. Right. But do you have a personal website as well?
I'm the good old IMDb, Audrey Moore, and then Audrey Scores Moore on Instagram and Audrey Helps Actors on Instagram. We do that gram life. And for my listeners, they can find you guys at Just Shoot It podcast on Instagram.
Yeah,
it's Just Shoot It Pod.
Just Shoot It Pod across.
We're not
going to
waste.
Social.
We don't want people to think
it's a
casting.
Nobody cares about
it's
casting.
A casting podcast.
Yeah, right. And the website, which will have links to everything that we talked about and all that stuff.
That's fantastic.
At justshootitpod.com.
Yeah,
that's great.
And I'm at O Kaplan on Instagram. Mm-hmm.
And I'm at Mr. Matt Enlow across everything.
I love your director's reel. It's very funny.
Oh, thank you.
Yeah, it's
killer
welcome.
Reel. It's very
if
good.
You want to be in my reel.
I'm ready.
$1 million. and your
to
headshot.
Finance it. Yeah, exactly.
Yeah. Cool. Well, cool. Well, so yeah, I guess that's it. This episode is produced by Madeline Rosewatt. It's edited by Jay McAuliffe. And our webmaster is Ewan Williams. The music you're hearing right now is from the Free Music Archive and the artist Jazar.